There you go, Sarah. Thank you.
I'm an addict. My name's Sarah. I have the honor and privilege of introducing the speaker today. She also happens to be my sponsor, Deb T. You know, Deb has been a part of mine and my husband's life for a long time. He actually knew her before I did, right? He met her in a place first. But Deb is big in the Cabana area, and so just being in that area, you know Deb. But in 2017, Henry and I were living in Corpus Christi, right? And I think that was probably the darkest year of my recovery ever. I got in my car every day and wanted to drive into traffic the other way, right? I just wasn't okay at all. And at the time, I had a sponsor that also lived in Corpus, and she's an amazing woman. She walked me through the steps several times. Every time I would finish, she would say, "All right, here we go again," right? And I was like, okay. So I worked the steps multiple times with this woman, and she's amazing. But I was in a really, really dark place, and I needed someone that could pick me up off the ground and love me back to life, because that's what I needed the most at that time. I needed some compassion and kindness and empathy. I needed to be treated with dignity, because I didn't feel like I was worth anything anymore, right? And we're supposed to work the steps in this program, but sometimes it's okay not to work the steps and just live them, right? That's the other part. So I remember being in this really, really dark place, and I'm looking for a sponsor because my sponsor actually let me go. And I was without a sponsor for like a week and a half, and I was going crazy. Like, I've never been in the program without a sponsor. You know, I didn't even know what that felt like. And at the time, I was around Deb a lot, right? And I remember asking her, like, "Will you sponsor me?" And she, of course, said, "I'm honored." And I said, "Okay, so what do you want me to do? You want me to start working the steps?" She said, "Honey, you've worked the steps so many times, you just need to breathe. Like, you just need to be." And so she just loved me back to life. And she introduced me to my sponsee sisters that also helped love me back to life, right? Because sometimes in this program, we get to dark places, right? We have to learn to live life on life's terms. And that doesn't always mean that Skittles are gonna fall from the sky. Like, you know what I mean? I'm really grateful to Deb. I'm really grateful for her kindness and her compassion that she has for the still suffering addict, for everyone. She's amazing like that. And I'm just grateful, Deb. The degradation of addiction robs us of self-respect. The care and respect we show each other in Narcotics Anonymous reminds us of our own value and humanity. The experience of unity restores us to dignity. We draw strength, courage, and honor from being part of something so much greater than ourselves. NA unity is our bond with fellow addicts, those who came before us, those who are here today, and those who have yet to find us. Our practice of unity makes room for all addicts to recover in NA. I know that Deb's gonna come up here and share a message of hope, because she's given hope to a lot of addicts. I'm gonna let her do her thing.
How am I supposed to follow that? I need to breathe. My name's Deb, and I'm an addict.
Yeah.
Hi. Let me get this water open. And try to stop crying. All right. So, by the grace of God in this program, I've been clean since 11-1 of 1997, and for that I am truly grateful. And it is due to the work. I would like to say it's the work I put in, but it's probably the work my sponsor put in. She spent a lot of hours working on me. So, I come from Corpus Christi originally, and was part of Cabana for many, many years. And mom and dad, normal childhood, sort of. My father died from this disease when I was 4 years old, and so I have no memory of him or it. And two things happened. Number one, my family erased my father as if he had never existed, which when I was four was not a problem, but as I got older, there were some problems. The second thing that happened in my life then was my mother decided that I needed a father, and she proceeded to marry every man she met. Father's Day still breaks me. You have no idea of me and Hallmark trying to find 12 guards. Seriously. But we learn, right? We learn when we're this big, we start learning how to live and how to cope and how to deal, right? And so, speaking a little bit to the women in the room right now, I know for myself, I grew up in a broken home. My mother had those wonderful behaviors of hers. And of course, I'm a little girl and I'm learning that, right? And what I learned through a lot of things was, and I know many girls feel this way as I've come into recovery, is, you know, for all of us, we're too short, we are too tall, we are too wide, we are too skinny, our hair is not the right color, we don't have the right clothes, we don't have the right shoes, we don't have the right anything, right? There's always that person who's better than us, prettier than us, smarter than us, right? And so, very awkward. I grew up an awkward child, and just one of those things. I can remember in third grade, there were a couple of girls that I wanted to be like them. And I wasn't. I didn't fit. And so what happened was, and I'll never forget it, it's my first time. I was 11 years old, and I lived in a trailer park. And a friend of mine, we broke into his dad's liquor cabinet. You remember those liquor cabinets that were like fake wood and they were orange on the front? And they had the little train with the shot glasses. Y'all remember that? We broke into them. And so we proceeded to take a big old drink out of the bottle, right? And I should have known I was in trouble then because he was like, oh, that was horrible. Me, I run outside, throw up, come back in, and I'm like, let's do it again. It was awesome. Right, and that started me off. That moment is the defining moment for my use. My behavior started way before then. And so as I got older, what I found was when I put substances in my body, all of a sudden I was tall enough, I was thin enough, my hair was enough, my smile was enough, I was smart enough, all of those things. And I lived on that for many years. What I didn't realize was that I was causing a whole wreck of destruction in my path, right? I just barreled through everybody and everything in my path. Richard had shared that he had not been homeless and had not, been in those shoes, and I have. So I had a couple of defining moments that sent me looking to get better. I started trying to get clean. When I was 23 the first time, my mother drove me to a treatment center after I had written about $7,000 worth of checks on her checkbook. And so we sat there and they did that wonderful assessment on me, and then they brought me back in with my mom and they said, man, she needs help. Like, you need to put her in here right now. My mom said, okay, that's wonderful. And they said, okay, it's $125 a day. How are you going to pay for that? And she said, it's cheaper to keep her. And she walked me out the door. It's funny now, right? So anyway, we started working on it. And somebody said to her, hey, there's a place you can take her. And I ended up there, right? And I'd love to say that I went through treatment and I got better and that was great. It's not what happened. again, needed to be wanted, needed, loved. And that's what's behind all that, right? I needed those things. And so I would find men. And then I have three unsuccessful trips to rehab. I proud to say the third trip, it was unsuccessful. I was asked to leave. But I've been clean since that trip because they discharged me at 10 a.m. And because I had been introduced to Narcotics Anonymous while I was in there, I was in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting at noon. And I was in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting at 8. And I was in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting the next day at noon. And I did that, and I did that, and I did that. People in the program gave me a place to stay. People in the program just led me through it, right? Even though I still had all those wonderful behaviors. I had a couple of sponsors in the beginning, that first year, year and a half. Would start to work steps with them. For whatever reason, the relationship didn't fit, right? They're all my dear, dear friends today, even. But it didn't fit. And so I went without a sponsor for a while. I'd like to say a week and a half like Sarah, but more like 6 months. And it was horrible. My behaviors were out of control. I was out of control. My husband, who has been in the program longer than I have, and the reason I got thrown out of rehab, his sponsor was lovely enough to sit with me and you know, talk to me a lot about the program and my behaviors and where I needed to be. But I needed a sponsor, right? And so this woman, and many of you know who she is, Judy Kay. And I'm going to cry about Judy Kay through this. I just need you to know that. Judy Kay walked up to me in a meeting one time and she said, "I'm your sponsor." Okay. And it is probably the most beautiful relationship I've ever had. So she said, "Let's work some steps." And when I got clean, of course, the flat book was fairly new. And so she wasn't accustomed to the flat book. So we did the old school NA step work, right? But she was a doer, right? Like, yes, you're going to work a step and you're going to sit down. And we'd work step one. And we sat there and she said, "Where in your life is it, you know, or is it unmanageable? What are you powerless over?" And it was so much bigger. That's where I learned that drugs weren't my problem. I was my problem. My behaviors, my thoughts, my feelings. I have an error. You know, I have first thought wrong disease. A comedian said that, and I went, "Oh my God, that's me." And it stuck with me ever since. But she was about working that. You know, you did this step. Now let's look at it in your life. And so we would take time between a step for me to practice what I was powerless over and where my life was unmanageable, to start working on making it manageable, right? How do I do that? And where does it affect my life? And so let me back up a minute. So they tell you in your first year, don't do these things, do these things, stay away from this, don't do this. I'm going to tell you that in the first 2 years of recovery, I tried to do everything you guys told me not to do. My husband and I are a blended family. He brought two boys to the marriage. I brought two girls to the marriage. And in my first 18 months clean, I had two babies. I want to talk about powerlessness and unmanageability. Ooh, that was fun. So I got the opportunity to do that, right? And when we moved forward, we moved into step two. I had a concept of a God, right? My family is Methodist by religion, so it was never hellfire and brimstone for me. So that gave me a good starting concept. I don't know that I ever felt like he had left me. I think that I just was running away from it. And so I was able to sit down and see that when Debbie gets in the middle and Debbie wants to control, things don't go well. And that's true to the day. 23 years into this program, when I put my foot in the middle of it, it's not going to go well. Right? And I still today will grab hold of something and think, I'm going to fix this. I'm going to make this come out the way it's going to come out. And I will make myself insane. And what I have to do is I have to stop. And then I have to pray. And then I have to breathe. And then I have to talk to the recovering addicts and say, "I'm crazy." Right? Because I'm crazy. And then I can move forward. And I can let it go and I can see what happens. And 99.999% of the time, it fixes itself. And I'm on the other end going, "Well, that was fun." So step three is really funny for me because I work in a treatment center and I do step work with clients, teaching it, teaching steps. And I always teach three like this, because this is how I do it. Step three is I made a decision, right? And people go, oh my God, it's a big step and blah, 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 right? I'm going to get ready. Super easy, right? I'm either going to live that way or I'm going to live this way. That's my decision. And I get up every morning and I make that decision. Am I going to live that way or am I going to live this way? And I still remember how miserable that way was. I never want to go back there. Never. I don't care how bad my day is on this side. I want to live this way today. And so making a decision isn't hard for me. And it's an action I can do all the time. And it works in my life, right? But it's more than making it in the morning. I got to make it all throughout the day. I encounter situations. I encounter people that I'm like, okay. I'm going to think it through. Am I going to act that way or am I going to act that way? And I literally have to have a Rolodex in my head, right? Because that first thought wrong comes up in the Rolodex and I'm like, hold on, I have to like turn it. And number two isn't much better sometimes. Sometimes it takes to four or five before I'm like, oh, okay, let's go with that one. Sometimes I forget to spin the Rolodex, that doesn't look pretty either. So it's not a problem. When my sponsor sat down and said, okay, it's time for you to do four, I was rough, right? And I, having a spouse that has more time than you is not always a good thing, because they scare the hell out of you just for the fun of it, right? Oh man, you're doing a four step? Oh, that's gonna be, oh man. You know, and I'm like, oh God, and I have the pen and my hand shaking. And what it was this beautiful experience, four and five, right? I sat down there, come back later, we're doing the dishes. That was. So I sat down and I did all this writing, right? And I noticed patterns in my life. I noticed that I can tell you things about me today. I'm a liar. I was a horrible liar in my addiction and I lied to get what I wanted when I wanted it. I will use that today on a smaller scale if I let myself be crazy. I will do stupid things like this. You ready? Hey, honey, did you take the trash out? Yeah, I took it out. And then I will go run and take the trash out. Why do I lie about that? I learned that I am a huge manipulator. I will manipulate to get what I want. I used it in horrible, horrible ways through my addiction. I hurt a lot of people with it. Still bump into it today. It's smaller, but if I want things from the husband, I know how to get them. And he gets manipulated. I think he knows it, he goes with it. But what I try to do is not hurt people today, right? That's where the steps work in my life. I've done a million four steps. I've done a million pieces of four steps because Judy K would, I would go to Judy K's house and I'd say, I'm gonna kill the kids and I'm gonna bury them in the backyard and nobody will ever know. And she'd say, sounds like you need to do an inventory. Damn. And I'll tell you another secret too, my kids, she moved two blocks from me. Many of you ever lived two blocks from your sponsor? My children would skateboard over there and tell on me. They called her Grandma Judy. She was literally their second grandma. It was wonderful, but yeah. And then she would show up on my doorstep or my phone would ring. And I'd be in the middle of a behavior or something of that nature and I'd be like, hi, how are you? And she's like, no, don't do that. So I sat down with her and I did that fist step, right? And she shared with me, and it was the first time that somebody had sat in front of me or sat with me and been honest to a level on their side that I felt like I could be honest to a level on my side. Like butt naked honest, right? And some of the things that she shared, and I was shamed, right? I had shame and I had guilt over all these things. In my addiction, my two daughters were living with my ex-husband, and I didn't even know where they lived, guys. Like, what kind of mom does that, right? Doesn't know where their kids are? And I had to come to terms with the fact that I chose, because I had a disease, I know that today, I chose to get high and to run around and to act a fool and do what I wanted to do and not be a mom to two little beautiful girls, right? That's my story. I got clean on 11-1 because on 10-31 of 97, I was sitting in a motel room and they were on the corner of a bed, right? And I'd had enough. And I was sitting there and it occurred to me that I did not know what my daughter's Halloween costumes were. And then it occurred to me that I didn't know if they liked ketchup on their french fries or what they wore to the first day of school. I didn't know what TV shows they liked. And I don't know why I got that clarification then, but I'm truly grateful today for it, right? I went to rehab the next day. So turning around and being able to share that stuff, where I can share it today with y'all, is huge, right? Because that's the stuff that was keeping me sick. The stuff that was down in there, and I thought, I am a horrible, horrible human being, and I don't deserve anything. And to be able to share that, and her to be able to share stuff back, and be able to say, you know what, I'm not alone in this. That works today for me. I truly believe that we're only as sick as our secrets, right? And so I try to be as honest as I possibly can in every situation. I don't ever want to be brutally honest. I think I have with a couple of my sponsees, but you know, they push me to the edge. Jessica. But honest with compassion, right? Honesty with compassion. I'm going to tell you that you're not okay with what your behaviors are, but I'm going to tell you that I love you and I'm with you in it. And let's get through it together. Because Judy Kay did that for me. When I was out of control, she stood with me. She held me and she loved me and she taught me to be a better human being. I watched her interact with everyone. Because down there, she was everyone. And she never judged. I had sponsee sisters, and I'm like, I don't even know why you talk to her. Like, I would judge them. And she never would. And they would do the same behavior, same as me, the same behavior over and over and over and over again, right? And she would love them through it. But I couldn't see that she was doing that for me until down the road. And so 6 and 7 came along. And I was terrified of 6 and 7, and I'll tell you why, much more than 4 and 5, I'll tell you why. I knew what my coping skills were, and I knew who I was, right? I knew this, Debbie. And the idea of letting that go, who's the Debbie on the other side? What if she's not okay? What if she's not a good person? What if I really, truly am the person that I'm afraid that I am? And so those two steps were the scariest for me. And when I came out on the other side, what I learned was, yes, I'm a liar, yes, I'm a manipulator, and a few other things. But I traded those, right? So I learned about spiritual principles and big time in there. Because everything that I had to trade in, right, I got back. So as a liar, what I practice is honesty. In judgment, I practice brotherly love and acceptance and tolerance and compassion. That's who I want to be, right? So that's who I strive to be every day when I get up. Every day. And I have bad days, don't get me wrong. And I can get real twisty with the lady at the gas pump. I'm human. But I want to be that person, so that's who I strive to be. I continue to work on that person because I'm never going to achieve it. Never. But I'm going to work towards it all the time. It took me a long time. 8 was easy, right, Nicholas? 9 took me a long time, and I'll tell you why. My ex-husband is a 4-letter word. No, really, his name's Todd. He's a 4-letter word. It's a cheesy joke, but it's fun. So I could not get to a point where I could say, I need to make an amends for this, this, and this, without saying, but he. Years, guys. We would talk about it again, and we would talk about it, and I'd say, yes, I did this, and I did this, and I did this, but he. And she'd say, nope, not yet. And we did that for years, and then what happened was he called me up one time to talk to me about our daughters, who, by the way, I got back into my life, because God loves me and gave me my husband's 2 children, my 2 children back, and our brand new 2 children. by 4 years in recovery. God never gives you more than you what you can handle. He had the wrong damn door that day, let me tell you. So it took a long time, and I'll tell you what happened. One time he called up to talk to me about one of our girls' behavior. Don't know where she gets it. And I said, well, I have you on the phone. I need to make an amends to you. And I had practiced it for years, right? And I laid it out there, and it was beautiful. And I didn't say anything about his. It was beautiful. It was perfect. It was textbook perfect. And he went, you're still worthless. Okay, thank you for your time. And we do not have a relationship today except where we have to for our daughters. And that's okay. I'm okay with it. The weird part and that way the steps work is when he said that, it didn't affect me. I was cleaning my side of the street. I had become a responsible, productive member of society by that time. I am no more what he said I was than if he had said I was this chair right here. I don't have to own what people say about me today. I know who I am. So I do a 10. I do a 10 all the time. Like I said, I run a treatment center. And so I work. A lot of my staff are recovering addicts. So it's a constant meeting. And some of us have good days and bad days, right? And so I have to 10 all the time. All the time. I walk away from somebody and think, okay, what did I do? Was I, you know, it's not even an end of day thing. It's like five times a day. But it works really well, and I have a wonderful team. But I have to use it in my life because I do say things that hurt people. I do have actions that affect other people. It's part of the human nature, right? What we have is a step that shows us how to go back and make that better. So that 20 years down the road, we're not thinking, well, I haven't talked to that person in 20 years because we got in a fight over Uncle Ted's picture on the wall, right? I don't have to live like that today. I get to keep the relationships in my world, and I get to build on them. And I get to say today that I'm sorry. I apologize and mean it. I don't have to say it to somebody four or five or six times. I'm going to tell you what my biggest failing right now is. I don't keep up with phone calls. I get home, I'm tired, they've called me, I'm like, no, I really need to, you know, watch Netflix and stare at the TV, and we all do it, that's why it's funny. And so I do that, and that's my failing, is I don't call them back, or I'm not available all the time by phone. It's my biggest failing, and I'm working on it, I'm consciously working on it with my now sponsor. So I'm pretty much out of time, but I'm gonna get through this real quick. So I work in service work. My 11 and 12, I work in service work, right? I work in service work all the time. I do prayer and meditation. I'm a firm believer that, yeah, we get the prayer part down, but the meditation is him talking to us. And if we don't sit still for a minute, how do we hear what he's telling us? And in the world we live in today, we go so fast all the time that we've got to have a minute to just be. Right, and a wonderful gentleman, and many of you may know him, his name's Tom Kay. When I was 7 years into this program, he gave me a book that said, Be Here Now. And it was the greatest gift at that time that I needed. And it teaches that. It talks about being in this moment. So in this moment right now will never happen again. We will never ever be right here ever again. And so it's living in that moment and embracing that moment and the people in that moment. Right? This is a huge gift, especially after the last year and a half we've been through. So, about 6 years ago, Judy Kay was diagnosed with COPD, which many of us have, because, you know, chain smoking in meetings and parking lots is good for us. And I'm not judging, I'm a smoker. So she was diagnosed, and it went downhill really quick. And I'm going to tell you the greatest gift I've been given and where the steps have worked in my life. I was there the day that they put her on hospice and said that she probably wouldn't make the month. And we took her home, and her brother was kind enough to get her hair done and her nails done. And so I pretty much hung out at her house. She had two big recliners in her living room, and she was in one and I was in the other. And that's how we stayed. And I would go to work, and then I would check on her because my work was very, very close. And we did that. And the greatest thing I got to do, number one, was be there when they told her the news and to support the woman who had gifted me the life I have today. And the second piece is I was there when she took her last breath. There is no greater gift. And I was able to do it with grace and dignity because that woman taught me how to live the steps. She put them in my life. She worked them with me. She showed me how to live them by showing me how to do it and having me do it. And so when that time came, I was ready. Didn't make it any less painful. I'm going to tell you that right now. I wear it on my neck, on my necklace. I have a new sponsor, which was a sponsee sister. We had been together as sponsee sisters for 15 years, and she's got some more time than I do, and it was perfect, right? Like, we just kind of melted into each other through this tragedy. And I thought, well, this will be cool because we, like, know each other whenever. No, she stepped into that sponsor role real quick. But she, again, was raised up by that same beautiful woman. And so we have this wonderful family of sisters that started there. So I'm about done. I'm out of time. And you guys are probably pretty ready to get up and move around again. I want to say thank you for having me here. It was truly an honor. I want to say that I am so appreciative that we can be together again. I miss y'all so much. Like, I need my people, and I need them. I need them here. I need them touching me. Appropriately anyway. You know, the screen is okay, and I love seeing your face, but I need to touch you guys, and I need to touch you with my soul, right? And I need your soul to touch mine. So go out there, live your best life, because we only get one. And I love all of you. Thank you so much.